Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
What a dumpster fire the Lakers are. I could have waited a while to talk about this. I couldn't wait last night when I saw that Magic Johnson press conference, which was one of the most ridiculous press conferences I've ever seen a person in position of power do, ever. Magic Johnson is stepping down as the president of the Lakers for a reason that doesn't really make any sense. Basically, he doesn't want the pressure, I think, of being the president of the Lakers. Maybe there's some sort of power struggle that went on between he and Luke Walton and Jenny Buss. He said he couldn't send tweets, which is one of the most ludicrous. I feel like we need to just play the entire 6.5 minute or so press conference, and we will do that to close out hour one and maybe to close out hour three too. I am blown away by this story. I came back. My oldest son's playing flag football right now. Get home, pull out the phone, and boom, I watched that video last night of Magic Johnson resigning and my jaw dropped. It's rare that something like this happens in the world of sports where a story is so absurd that as I'm sitting watching it, I'm like, this just is totally nonsensical. The idea that Magic Johnson can't be president because he can't tweet congratulations to Dwayne Wade or Russell Westbrook. Can't he text them? I mean, that's my first thought was, people are worried that I'm tampering if I'm tweeting congratulations. My first thought is, why can't you just text the guys? And my second thought is, do people really need to hear from Magic Johnson congratulations to Russell Westbrook for having a good game? Is everybody out there like, man, I didn't know what to think about Dwayne Wade's career because I didn't see a tweet from Magic Johnson about it? And he says the reason why he had to suddenly step down as president in a press conference without having told Jenny Buss, despite the fact that he had a 3-hour meeting with her the day before, was because he knew if he told her, she wouldn't let him resign. And so he decided to publicly tell everybody before he told her. It's just nonsensical. Magic Johnson has been a failure in most public jobs. Now, he's had a lot of success as a business person, it appears. But he lasted 14 months as a team president for the Lakers, 8 weeks as a talk show host. You remember that back in the day? And 16 games as a head coach. I think he likes an easy life. And when he takes on things that are incredibly challenging, he doesn't really enjoy them very much. But where does this leave the Lakers? They're going to need to find a new president. They may still need to find a new coach. Who knows what in the world's going to go on there. They've got to find out a way to get an asset to pair with LeBron James. And if you were a top NBA player right now, why would you go to the Lakers? This is an organization that is falling apart with a franchise star in LeBron James who fell apart in year one in LA and who doesn't really care that much, it doesn't appear, about winning anymore. All LeBron cares about is his brand off the court. He's going to turn 35 years old. We're going to talk with Chris Mannix about this shortly. But this is, I don't even think it's fair to call it a dumpster fire right now in the Lakers organization. Think about how much of a dumpster fire some of the top brands in all of Los Angeles are right now. And I asked you guys to vote, and the Lakers, you said, were infinitely worse of a dumpster fire. You've got the UCLA men's basketball program, which finally hired Mick Cronin after conducting one of the most drunken, incompetent searches in the history of college sports. Then they bring in Mick Cronin. General rule, by the way, when you hire a guy and the place that you're hiring from celebrates because you have taken him away from them, you didn't make a good hire. I can't think of any head coach where the general response has been exultation, like we saw with the Cincinnati fans, and then he's left and become a real success somewhere else. It's different than getting fired and going somewhere else. This is, he decides to leave and everybody's ecstatic. I can't remember it happening. Then you've got USC, which has been selling admission spots, whose entire athletic department is a dumpster fire as well. You got Lynn Swan, who's basically done, it appears, at USC. Top athletic department officials selling spots, being charged by the FBI with criminal conduct. And the Lakers, according to you guys, are still more of a dumpster fire. And what about LeBron? We didn't talk a lot about this, but they polled NBA players and said, who's the greatest of all time, LeBron or Michael Jordan and or Kobe? And LeBron barely got more votes than Kobe. It was like 72% Michael Jordan, 12% LeBron, 11% Kobe, something like that. And a few other people voted for other players. I can't think of a year that has been more destructive to a legacy than what LeBron has done with the Lakers this year. Even you LeBron stands out there running around in your LeBron James sneakers, constantly buying the new jerseys. You got the Heat jersey still in your closet. You got the Cavs jersey still in your closet. You've been rocking that Laker jersey. Even you guys, deep down in your heart, this tiny percentage of the American fan base that is hardcore LeBron fans, even you guys are like, you know what? Our boy let us down this year. This was a disaster. And I don't see it getting any better. I really don't. We're going to talk with Chris Mannix shortly, but I think this offseason for the Lakers is going to be about trading LeBron James. I think that's what's going to end up happening. Whether or not it makes sense to trade LeBron James and end this Laker experiment after 1 year. It's the move that should happen. Because what they tried to do was bring in a veteran with a young core. And in order for either of these situations to work out, either the young core has to get traded, which the Lakers weren't able to pull off. Or LeBron James has to get traded and you have to build around that young core going forward. Mixing the two doesn't make sense. It's oil and water at this point. But I want to bring in the kings of the Laker fan base, Danny G and Roberto. And I want you to defend the unmitigated disaster that is the Laker franchise.
Good thing you're not predictable, Clay. Defend your boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, what is there to defend? You know what's going on here in Los Angeles with the Lakers. So I don't think there's any Laker fan waking up this morning saying, oh, everyone is wrong and I'm right. No, Laker fans are just as upset as you, and you don't have any stake in the game.
This is the weakest defense I've ever heard
it's
from
not
a Laker fan.
I'm just saying.
Your defense was
defense?
You're so predictable.
What defense? What do you want to hear from Laker fans, Clay? I'm saying you're predictable because you're tweeting out something not original at all, saying LeVar Ball should be the general manager. Ha ha ha. Like, that's funny and original. I mean, you could read that on anybody's Twitter across the country.
No, not really. Did anybody's Twitter across the country get, let's see.
Oh, boy. Here
2,000 retweets, 2,000 favorites.
So that's your defense of being non-original on your Twitter?
Your Twitter feed had no defense of the Lakers at all.
Why,
you've been
why?
King Laker defender. And
are you kidding me?
We've there's been nothing to defend, though.
We are Laker fans, and we've ripped our own team on this show. I don't understand what you're saying right now. How have we defended LeBron and the Lakers? Tell us.
All season long, you've been refusing to point out that they're a dumpster fire.
LeBron, you didn't know they were a dumpster fire until the beginning of February. At Christmas, you thought they were okay.
An unmitigated disaster.
Unmitigated disaster. It wasn't until the stuff that went down with Anthony Davis that you started to go in on the Lakers after the Lakers beat the Celtics and you took that bad loss on television. That's when you turned into a certifiable Laker hater on the radio and you started to sound like every other national host who was piling on the Lakers. They have
the Lakers
been
are
a fantastic organization up until the point when Dr. Buss passed away. None of his kids have filled his shoes even slightly. I knew Dr. Buss. He was a great man. He was the reason the Lakers flourished and became what they became. Without him, they have struggled. They were able to get it together and win a title in 2010. And obviously, this past decade has been a lot of ups and downs, more downs than ups, that's for sure, and a lot of problems, especially in the front office. And here we go again. Jeannie Buss took over for her brother, and it's turning out
a failure as well.
Yeah, and it's turning out to be
Here's
not much
deal,
better
though.
Than her brother.
Jeannie Buss didn't do anything wrong. Magic Johnson standing up in front of the media and giving that insane press conference is not Jeannie Buss's fault.
Well, yeah, she made the mistake of hiring Magic instead of hiring Jerry West to begin with.
Well, you can argue that Magic didn't ever deserve to be the president of Laker basketball operations, but almost everybody who even made that statement, people immediately ripped. I remember Dan Le Batard saying Magic Johnson's not up to this job, and he got accused of being a racist. Dan Le Batard, do you remember that? Now, Magic, after 14 months, just abandoned ship. We have no idea what's going to happen with the head coach. We have no idea what's going to happen with any a dumpster fire. Because he stayed behind Eric Spoelstra and said, basically stood up to LeBron and said, I'm not going to let you try to become default president, GM, owner, everything with Miami. And as a result, Pat Riley had the backbone to stand up to LeBron James, and there was they had some success, right? Then he goes to Cleveland, and he just is a coaching disaster, right? Eventually, Ty Lue comes in, and I think it's a credit to LeBron's overall talent that Ty Lue won anything. And really, if Draymond Green doesn't get suspended, I think the Lakers lose. I mean, the Cavs lose that series in five games, and everything is different with LeBron James's entire history in terms of trying to assess where he ranks all time. And now you've got what I think is LeBron James going to the Lakers and creating utter disaster, not only for his organization, but for the Pelicans, for much of the NBA. And I don't know whether LeBron and his agent representation are really this unsophisticated, but they think they are playing chess and everybody else in the NBA can easily see that they're playing checkers instead. And now everybody is just starting to fall around at the top of the Lakers. And I understand the Lakers are a storied franchise, but would you want to be president of the Lakers when effectively LeBron James and his representation are running the Lakers right now? I think the only way to cure the Lakers situation right now is to trade LeBron James. This offseason, instead of trying to bring in a big-time second free agent, which I don't think is going to happen, I don't think anybody's going to want to go to play with LeBron and the Lakers without a team president, without knowing who the coach is, with a 35-year-old aging superstar who had to get put on the shelf. I don't know why anybody who's really good would join this franchise right now. And so, as a result, I think there are no easy solutions here other than to trade LeBron James. Might sound crazy, but we'll see whether or not Chris Mannix agrees, because that's the only way I think the Lakers can go back to at least building slowly around the young talent that they have on the team at this point.
Yeah, we're going to have to see here if Jeannie Buss is going to really allow a general manager to walk in and have power and do his thing, because the rumors are that she is still in love with Luke Walton and doesn't want him to leave as the Lakers coach, and Magic Johnson wanted to replace him. And so that's where the disconnect was between the two of them.
Yeah, but
Magic,
I don't even
Jeannie.
Think it matters who the head coach is right now. The chaos agent here is LeBron James.
How much of it is real and how much of it is media-driven with a narrative, though? Because, you know, in the media, We love to build up players, and then we love to tear them down, and everybody does the pile-on thing. How much of this stuff with LeBron is real as far as players not wanting to play with him?
I mean, I think that'll be decided this summer. But the bigger issue is LeBron created the disaster that was this year's Lakers team by deciding that they were going to leak that Anthony Davis wanted to be traded and that the Lakers had to make a move to make it happen. He destroyed the locker room. He turned all the young guys against him. He created a, I thought Magic was interesting talking about how, you know, he didn't want to really get involved in the palace intrigue. Well, when you're the president of his organization, I mean, that's like Game of Thrones, right? People are always trying to advance themselves around you. Part of your job is to maintain political control of this situation. So I think that ultimately, while the people are going to say, oh, Jenny Buss is running a bad organization, while people are going to point at Magic Johnson, while people are going to point at Luke Walton, the person at the center of all of this collapse and all of this dumpster fire is LeBron James. He is the agent of chaos that has unleashed disaster for the Laker organization.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let me go ahead and bring in Chris Mannix here, and let's try to break down the disaster that is the Laker franchise right now. Chris, what did you think of that Magic Johnson press conference and the way he stepped down as president?
I mean, completely shocking, because there wasn't a person in the league that saw that coming. Was there the belief that Magic Johnson was a lifer as a Laker executive? Of course not. His history suggests that he's got kind of a wandering eye. I mean, this is the guy, of course, that despite his success in the business community, he was a Laker coach for 16 games before saying, I don't want to do this anymore. He was, the ill-fated talk show host for 8 weeks before that thing fizzled out. And, the Lakers, just the latest in the long line of things that Magic Johnson has done, he's kind of gotten bored with. But to do it in this manner, to just pop in front of the media without telling his boss and, kind of making it about him, there, making it seem okay because he couldn't face his boss, was just really, really stunning.
The end result is Magic is gone, and there's not going to be much continuing fallout, I would say, for Magic Johnson. He has stepped off the Titanic potentially before it goes down and hopped onto a lifeboat, and he can go have a pina colada wherever he wants now. Before we get to that, though, the logic based on what he was saying he was leaving the team for, so he could send tweets, and so, and because he couldn't talk to Jenny Buss face-to-face, it's a strange logic, right? Like, the entire press conference made no logical sense whatsoever other than Magic Johnson just doesn't want to have this job, right? I mean, that was basically the biggest takeaway.
Yeah, that's what it boils down to. Magic Johnson wants to be Magic Johnson. He doesn't want to be Magic Johnson, executive, coach, with any responsibility whatsoever. As an owner, he can just basically sort of sit back and be an ambassador for the Dodgers. He doesn't have any responsibility in that role. That's kind of the role I think he wants. I mean, to be an NBA general manager, and I know this from working around these guys, and I'm sure it's the same for being a general manager in other sports. It's not like, being a teacher, where you work, 6 months out of the year and you get summer vacation. It's a year-round type of job. And you have to be willing to hop on planes and go to Croatia or, develop relationships over the phone with, coaches, local college coaches across the country to get the real truth about, what you're seeing in a player. I mean, Magic Johnson just wasn't willing to put that level of commitment in to that job. So he just said, I want to go back to being Magic Johnson. I mean, this is, Clay, it is kind of Twitter's first casualty there. We have the first executive slash coach slash whatever who basically said that he doesn't want to, as part of the reason he was quitting, he wanted to go out there and tweet more. He wanted to have the shackles taken off him as a Twitter personality, and that's what Magic is doing. But by the way, like, if Magic had tweeted Dwayne Wade, and said congratulations, the NBA wouldn't have cared. If he had said great performance Russell Westbrook on Twitter, the NBA wouldn't have cared. What the NBA cares about is you can't take Ben Simmons under your wing one summer and then chase him as a free agent the next summer. And that's just something Magic just couldn't deal with.
Okay, so Magic is illogical. It makes no sense. He just wants an easier life. I mean, that basically is the takeaway here. What happens with the Lakers now?
Well, for starters, it is a coveted job. I mean, regardless of, and you're right that the Lakers are kind of a mess right now because, you know, they're on one clock with their younger players and another clock with LeBron James, who's 34, and they have to figure out how to win with him over the next, you know, 2 or 3 years. It still is a job that everyone's going to be after. And if you're Jeannie Buss, you've got to look at this as an opportunity. You really do, because you know Magic didn't leave the cupboard bare per se. I mean, LeBron is there, but more importantly, for a GM coming looking at this as a long term thing, he has drafted reasonably well over the last couple of years. He hasn't free spent in the way that Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss free spent. The Lakers have a ton of cap space this summer, even though they're probably not going to land one of the marquee free agents, at least not in an outright signing. So there's opportunity here for a good rebuild. Plus, the assets that the resources Jeannie Buss can have, it can throw at a GM are substantial. I mean, if you're Jeannie Buss, my first order of business would be to look at Sam Presti in Oklahoma City, Masai Ujiri in Toronto, Tim Connelly in Denver, and if they even show a modicum of interest in the job, I would, you know, FedEx them a blank check and say fill in the number, because there is no dollar figure that's too big if you're the Lakers to pay a general manager that's top flight. I mean, they can't go out and offer it to Kobe or, you know, make AC Green the assistant GM. They have got to go out there and get a basketball lifer to make this thing work.
What happens with LeBron?
Hey, it all depends on the next GM, but, I mean, there's not really a lot you can do with him. I mean, I'd love to sit here and have the discussion with you about, you know, the merits of trading him, but I don't know if even the gutsiest GM can go in there and make a deal like that and sort of engage in that kind of war with LeBron, like, hey, do you want to go play in Denver? Or do you want to go play in, you know, Miami or some other place that might acquire him at this stage of his career? I don't know that a GM would do this. But I think he stays, and you just try to build around him. But if you're a general manager, you can't take that job with satisfying LeBron James and the rest of his career in mind. You can't go out there and overspend this summer on Jimmy Butler or DeMarcus Cousins. You've got to take that job looking at it as, I've got to do the best thing long-term for the franchise. And that means signing guys like a bunch of shooters this next summer to one-year deals to help you get the sixth or seventh seed, so be it. There's got to be a long-term plan in place in the mind of the next GM.
How much of the blame for the chaos in the Laker organization should fall at LeBron James' feet and his representation's feet?
Oh, I think a substantial amount, because, you know, they were going to have a problem coming into this season with some of the one-year contract guys and their ability to kind of galvanize them during tough times. When you're a mercenary and you know you're coming up on free agency, you know, a lot, your fallback or your default position is going to be, I'm going to get mine and, you know, the team be damned to a certain degree. But after the Davis stuff happened, it just felt like a lot of those young guys for a while checked out and looked at LeBron differently. And, you know, look, it's not hard to connect the dots between LeBron saying he'd love to play with Anthony Davis, Anthony Davis's representative, who happens to be LeBron's representative, you know, orchestrating a pretty stunning announcement, you know, 2 weeks before the trade deadline, announcement that can only be done, that is only done in order to get your player to the Lakers, and then all the stuff that happened in the aftermath. I mean, I think I heard Alvin Gentry said last night after the Pelicans game that, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said that the Anthony Davis impact on the Lakers and the Pelicans season, what happened there, was the most toxic thing he's seen in, I think, 31 years of coaching. And if you're the Lakers, you have to look at LeBron James and and the representation there as being a big part of that.
LeBron James' first year at the Lakers, I don't even know that F is a generous enough overall grade. I mean, it's something below F is probably a more accurate approximation. LeBron has 3 years left on his deal, right? What in the – like, how does this thing resolve itself? I mean, if you were looking at this in an intelligent, logical fashion – does he finish his 3 years with the Lakers? I mean, to me, this is just as bad of a situation as you go into the offseason as you can possibly imagine facing the Lakers.
You know, he would have to ask to be traded, and then he'd have to play a part in who he is traded to. Is that possible? I think it's possible, especially if this summer the Lakers come up dry. I mean, if we have this conversation in September, October, Clay, and the Lakers are in the same kind of position that they're in right now, I think at that point it's worth the next GM sitting down with LeBron and saying, what do you want to do? I don't think you can outright just deal him without having his input on that, but I think you have to have a pretty frank conversation because, you know, I don't believe they're going to get Anthony Davis. I just think there are too many teams that are able to outbid them for Davis, and the Pelicans have no incentive to make Davis happy. And wherever Anthony Davis gets traded to, more likely than not, I think they're going to be that team's going to be able to re-sign him at the end of that run. And then you look across the league. I mean, Kevin Durant's not going there. Kawhi Leonard's not going there. Maybe you could overpay for Jimmy Butler to get him there. Maybe you could overpay for DeMarcus Cousins to get him there. But does that move the needle and move the Lakers substantially closer to a championship-level team? Of course not. So I think if they get to training camp and they don't look like a team that has the ability to win or at least compete for something over the next couple of years, you've got to have a conversation with LeBron about his future.
We're talking to Chris Mannix. All right, the NBA playoffs are almost set. Would you take, let's leave aside the Laker drama here for a moment, would you take the Warriors or the field?
I'd still take the Warriors. I think whoever comes out of the East could make it interesting. And the Houston series is always interesting, but I don't, you know, it always comes down to, you know, you say, like, the Rockets can beat the Warriors, and of course they can in a game or two games, but winning 4 out of 7 against Golden State just sounds impossible. And then I have my concerns about, you know, DeMarcus Cousins, and is he a liability or an asset, especially late in games, and will Steve Kerr pull him out of those games and go smaller if it turns out he's a liability on the defensive end of the floor? The answer is probably yes. And, you know, of all the teams in the playoffs, I mean, they have, you know, that proverbial flip the switch ability. I mean, they were bored all regular season, which we said in the preseason they probably would be. And you get to the playoffs, and this team, knowing that it's probably Kevin Durant's last run, they're going to be motivated. And I just don't see a team beating them in 4 out of 7 games. I mean, if somehow Boston gets it together, and that's always a big question mark, but if they get it together and go on a run in the Eastern Conference playoffs, that's a team that's given Golden State all kinds of problems over the last few years. It's the style with which they play. It's the coaching staff in Boston. It's the ability to switch defensively on everybody. That's probably the team that, if they get to the finals, could make things interesting. But I think right now they're the only one.
You just mentioned that you didn't. It's crazy, but I think already, if the Warriors go and win a title, the storyline through much of the NBA playoffs is going to be, what will Kevin Durant do? The Knicks has been the long rumored destination. He could obviously return with the Warriors, and they could continue the dynasty. What do you think Durant does, and do you think he really has a strong inclination right now?
I think more likely than not, it's a lean towards the Knicks. And I base that on a couple of things, not the least of which is, as crazy as the Knicks are and as mind-boggling as some of the moves they've made have been, they can't have just dumped Kristaps Porzingis unless somebody told them that Durant was going there. I mean, imagine if the Knicks came up with nothing this offseason and they traded Porzingis away for, you know, 40 cents on the dollar. I mean, where would they be? And how would they be able to justify any of this to the fan base that's out there? So I think they've gotten more than just a wink and a nod from Durant's camp that he wants to be there. So I lean toward the Knicks on that end. But, you know, Durant's a fickle guy too. I mean, we know during his last round of real free agency when he left Oklahoma City, he was influenced by the meetings he took. He was affected by Tom Brady popping in and, you know, showing up at the Celtic meeting. And yeah, Oklahoma City, of course, leaving them was tough. And the Knicks, you know, the Knicks over the last decade, when it comes to this stuff, have not been very good in the room. And maybe that's because James Dolan shows up and it goes sideways with him there. Maybe it's because they're not as prepared as they should be to show a free agent a clear path to winning a championship. But the Knicks still have the ability, I think, to bungle this in the room. And that's always a question when it comes to them.
Last question for you. The Dirk Nowitzki and Dwayne Wade both riding off into the sunset. The ironic thing about Magic Johnson's decision is he says he wants to send a tweet congratulating Dwayne Wade. His decision completely snows under, in terms of a storyline, the end of Dirk's career and the end of Dwayne Wade's career. How much of an impact did those guys have, and how incredible of a career do they have, and what kind of thoughts do you have about those guys as they ride off into the basketball sunset?
I mean, two of the all-time greats in different ways and how they impacted the game. I mean, Dwayne Wade is certainly, I think, on that Mount Rushmore of shooting guards. I don't know where you rank him up there, but if you say it's Kobe, Michael, maybe Oscar Robertson in that mix, and Dwayne Wade, I wouldn't argue with you. I mean, he's just been remarkable. And Dirk, you know, I think Yao Ming was probably the most impactful international import because of what a guy coming over from China meant and all the scrutiny he was under from day one to the last day of his career. But, you know, Dirk is the greatest international player of all time is clear cut. I mean, I found it interesting how both these guys went out. I mean, Dwayne Wade clearly wanted the kind of retirement tour, the one last dance, all that. And, you know, that's great. I mean, I thought the whole thing was handled pretty well by Wade, by the Heat, by everybody. It never seemed like a distraction to the team at all. Meanwhile, Dirk, up until like last night when he took the microphone in Dallas, nobody knew what he was going to do. Like he would never admit that this might be his last year or this was going to be the end for him. I mean, he was moving like, you know, a 50-year-old man out there. But if he had said, I want to come back for one more year and mentor Kristaps Porzingis, nobody would have been surprised. But, you know, Dirk wanted to go out on his own terms and very quietly. And honestly, like, that's kind of one of the more disappointing things about yesterday. I mean, we spent all last night, you know, dissecting and all this morning talking about Magic Johnson when the reality is we should have been kind of talking about Dirk Nowitzki and Dwayne Wade and what they meant to the NBA.
Good stuff as always, Chris Mannix. Follow the chaos as we roll into the playoffs. Enjoy it. Appreciate it, my man.
You got it, Clay.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We bring in Michael Avenatti. He is right now going to war with Nike. And Michael, I appreciate you coming on. This story that you're involved in, I am utterly fascinated by because the evidence that you have put out there is every bit as damning, if not more so, against Nike as what the government has put forward about Adidas. So I want to start with this question. How in the world did you get involved in this case?
I was approached by a client, an AAU basketball coach, Gary Franklin Sr. out of Los Angeles, who asked me to get involved on his behalf because Nike had basically cut his legs out from underneath him when he finally blew the whistle on him and told him that he wouldn't go along with their scheme any longer to pay amateur players. And, you know, let me also say it's a pleasure to be with you this morning. I appreciate your coverage of this story. I think it's a very big story. I think it's an important story. And look, people can think whatever they want to think about me personally and politically, but the documents don't lie, Clay. And
yep.
We posted the documents. And, you know, no one has yet to claim that we fabricated any documents because, of course, we didn't. I mean, there's text messages, there's bank statements, there's emails. Nike hasn't denied a single thing that I've said, which should tell you volumes.
It is amazing to me because I feel like, and look, people can agree or disagree with you on political related issues. Everybody's got different opinions there. But I always try to look at the evidence itself, right? Regardless of who's bringing forth the evidence. And you got the bill of goods here, right? I mean, Nike is dead to rights when I've looked over everything that you have put out there. And yet, it seems like many in the quote-unquote mainstream media, and certainly in the sports media, have not really covered this story. Why do you think that is? Do you think they are protecting Nike, many people in the industry that I'm a part of, and just in general in the world of sports?
I think a lot of people are protecting Nike, and I also think that Nike was somewhat successful in the stunt they pulled a couple weeks ago by having me arrested. They went to the government. They told the government a bucket of lies. They told them 10% of the story. They continued to hide their own rampant criminal conduct. The government did a four-day investigation, which is unheard of at the federal government level. I mean, you can't have somebody arrested and charged in 4 days unless they have a rocket-propelled grenade launcher in the back of a pickup truck and they're driving towards a high building or tall building or a major U.S. airport. It just doesn't happen. So they got the government all spun up, deceived the government, had me arrested and charged, all in an effort to undercut me. And ultimately, it's not going to work because the facts are the facts. And I could get hit by a bus today. You know, some of your listeners may be hoping for that. But I could get hit by a bus today. And this story's not going away. I mean, this is a company that engaged in rampant illegal bribes and conduct of high school players. Now, a lot of your listeners, a lot of people in sports say, well, big deal. You know what? These kids should be paid. They come from underprivileged households. This is their shot. They should be paid. And you know what, Clay? I agree. I actually believe amateur players should be paid. But that's not what this is about. This is about a major corporation rigging the system, not out of charity for these players. I mean, Nike, at the end of the day, they don't give a shit about these players. They care about their own corporate profits. That's why they're engaged in this. And I don't think that the college recruitment process of major talent, athletic talent, should be turned over to Nike. I mean, should we just let Nike decide, which is effectively what is going on, which high school or which college programs succeed and which don't, which colleges enjoy success and which don't? I don't think so.
One of the allegations that you've laid out is that Nike had Zion Williamson's mother on the payroll for a while in advance of him deciding where he was going to go to college. What can you tell? And, by the way, I appreciate you coming on. Appreciate you getting up early with us. There are a lot of people out there, all 50 states, listening to us right now that frankly don't know that much about this story. So walk me through, as if you could, as if you were talking to a jury, what happened with Zion, what evidence you have that connects Zion and his family to Nike.
Well, here's what I'm at liberty to say right now. We've released 41 pages of documents relating to bribes paid to three players, not including Zion. I tweeted out the request aimed at Duke relating to coming clean about what happened relating to Zion and his mother in connection with the Adidas case, which was the prior case alleging Adidas engaged in similar conduct, although not nearly to this scale. There was a audio wiretap that was intercepted where Zion evidently was demanding certain financial benefits to go play at Kansas. Well, we know he ultimately did not go to play at Kansas, and we're alleging that the reason he went to Duke was because Nike provided various financial benefits through Zion's mother in order for him to go play at Duke. And again, you know, Duke has said they're investigating. They haven't denied it. Zion Williamson hasn't denied it. His mother hasn't denied it. Nike hasn't denied it. No one's denied it. The only thing that Nike has done is they try to attack my credibility and claim that I can't be trusted because I was arrested and charged, yet they don't deal with any of the facts. They don't deal with any of the documents or any of the other allegations, which, again, I think should tell people everything they need to know. And I think this is a scandal. I think it's a huge scandal. I think there's a lot of people that engaged in illegal conduct at Nike. And I will tell you, Clay, and we've presented evidence of this. I mean, this goes to the top Nike. I mean, we're not talking about lower level individuals that did not have access to the C-suite, as they say. This goes to the very top of Nike. It went on for many years. You're talking about countless criminal conduct.
Do you think this, again, I am utterly fascinated by this story. And we're talking to Michael Avenatti. He has alleged all sorts of improprieties on behalf of Nike. Why do you think the government focused on Adidas and basically has given Nike so far and Nike executives a pass? I mean, I haven't seen any public reports of Nike offices being raided. I haven't seen any of that. It seems like the government just basically bought into this idea of Adidas is behaving improperly, which for anybody out there who followed this story, and I know a lot of my listeners have, it never made sense that Adidas would be bidding for players against themselves, right? If Adidas was the only company paying players, they wouldn't have needed to do it because there wouldn't have been a market. They were in an arms race with Nike, yet somehow Nike, including in your situation, has so far escaped all the blame and everything has rained down upon Adidas pretty much.
Well, Clay, I happen to agree with you. I mean, this doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, let's back up a minute. So Merle Code, who's the individual at the center of the Adidas scandal, who was just convicted on multiple federal counts, he used to be at Nike. He's the one that basically trained Carlton DeBose, who is now at Nike and the head of their elite youth basketball league. He, together with Jamal James, are the two principal individuals that were doctoring these invoices and routing payments to players. And if I can just back up, because I think that this is helpful, what they were doing was they would have these amateur basketball coaches from around the country that had access and contact with these players submit bogus invoices to Nike associated with their youth basketball program. Nike would then pay the bogus invoices to the coaches and direct them to make payments to the players, their handlers, and their families, sometimes in cash, sometimes by way of wire transfer to the handlers, sometimes by check. There was all kinds of mechanisms by which they routed tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars to these players around the country. And we're talking about, we're not talking about just a few players, we're talking about a scandal that reaches well over 100 players, including DeAndre, last year's number one NBA pick. So we're talking about some of the best talent in college basketball. I don't know why thus far Nike has been able to get away with this. And I don't know why, for instance, how is it that Carlton DeBose and Jamal James, in light of the evidence that's been presented relating to their criminal conduct, how are those two guys still at Nike? I mean, any other corporation in America would have at least suspended them while they conducted an investigation, but not Nike. I mean, these guys are running around the country, still employed, like there's nothing wrong, and all of this is copacetic. It's disgusting. They basically rigged the college recruitment process for athletes and have taken it over to determine which colleges do well and which don't.
I mean, we're talking about, you said tens of thousands, potentially hundreds of thousands. You mentioned 100 players. I mean, over the course of time, this is potentially millions of dollars that Nike could have routed to top high school players under what you're saying is a scheme to basically allow to look like they're getting invoiced for whatever it is, and in reality, they're just giving cash in exchange for costs that didn't really ever exist.
Oh, no, it's absolutely millions of dollars. I was just talking about on an individual player basis.
Yeah.
No, it's many millions of dollars. It's tens of millions of dollars. And if you think about it from Nike's perspective,
it's a good business.
You know, this is a drop in the bucket because what Nike's doing is they're trying to ingratiate themselves with these players. And also, you know, to the extent that people are out there saying, oh, well, Nike's doing good by way of these players and their families, you know, I call BS. Nike is ingratiating themselves with these players because they want the players to ultimately sign a shoe deal with Nike when they come out of college. And they're also putting the players and their families at risk for federal criminal prosecution by taking this money, and they're not telling them that. So they're basically putting them under their thumb and gaining leverage over these players while they're teenagers. You know, Nike, this is not charity work on Nike's behalf, and Nike should be indicted as a corporation, and these executives should be called to account for what they've done.
Do you think, we're talking to Michael Avenatti, this is, I think, just a massively fascinating and interesting story. People right now may be listening to us and saying, okay, this sounds, and by the way, you can go look at the evidence that Michael has put out there. It's pretty compelling. I've read it all, regardless, like you said, of what you think of Michael himself. So let's go back to you. People out there may be listening, they may be saying, okay, I buy into a lot of this stuff. And I tweeted this yesterday. If Yahoo Sports had published everything that you have, people would be like, oh my God, this is amazing. This Nike investigation, this just basically is lifting a veil off the way that the college basketball universe exists now. Players have been getting paid for years and years, and Nike has been doing that in an illegal fashion. Do you feel like maybe the reason this hasn't gotten as much attention is because Nike played you as a villain? It's a great point you've made. Nike hasn't denied any of this, and even an extortion claim, which they got the federal government to bring, is predicated on an underlying level of truth, right? You can't extort somebody about something that's not true because they'll just say, hey, that's a lie. There's no evidence for it. You've provided all this evidence. I mean, this is mind-blowing stuff, what's going on right now.
Well, as it relates to this extortion claim, I am highly confident that we're going to beat that claim. I mean, this is absolutely bogus. And when the facts and the evidence are presented, there's going to be a lot of people embarrassed relating to what happened here and how Nike played the federal government. That's exactly what they did. They did it out of their own self-interest. And I'm looking forward to being fully exonerated on this alleged extortion because it never happened. You know, I think that this is a very big story. There's no question that Nike did this. There's no question their executives did it. Like I said, the documents are what the documents are. I mean, text messages, emails, bank statements, and I mean, we've only scratched the surface. And let me raise this issue, Clay. Where is Duke and Arizona and Oregon and UNLV and all these other colleges that do business with Nike? They are now aware of concrete evidence that Nike has engaged in rampant federal criminal conduct, in bribing players, and yet they haven't come out and spoken out against Nike. I mean, do they routinely do business with companies that engage in bribery and illegal payments to amateur players? They think that's okay. Even the colleges who did not necessarily have players that came to those colleges at the direction of Nike, do they think this conduct is okay? If one of their students engaged in this conduct, they'd expel them from the university. They'd be front and center talking about how terrible this is. But many of them are looking the other way. And you know why they're looking the other way? Because of money. Because they want the dirty money from Nike. It's just that simple.
Do you think coaches, I mean, we know on some level there are text messages where Bill Self basically is saying, hey, I need for Adidas to do for me. And Rick Pitino certainly lost his job. What Nike is doing for the UNCs and the Dukes of the world out there, right? Like, we have this idea, oh, this coach is such a great recruiter. Do you think that a guy like Coach K is aware of what Nike is doing? It would be almost impossible for him not to be aware, right?
I don't know how any coach at a major, quote, Nike, close quote, college, meaning a college with a relationship with Nike, I don't know how any coach could not be aware of what's going on. I mean, does Coach K think that Zion Williamson ultimately turned down compensation at Kansas just because Coach K and Duke are that great? I mean, I know they have a very high, they hold themselves in very high regard, and rightfully so. They've had a lot of great success. But you begin to wonder, why have they had so much success? You know, I think Nike schools have won 17 of the last 20 NCAA championships. It's starting to look like that's not a coincidence.
And you're also pointing to something here which is really amazing, which everybody becomes complicit, which is why this story hasn't blown up in the way that I think it should have, because so many of these universities out there know that their championships are predicated or their coaching success is predicated on Nike delivering players, so they're just hoping this story is going to go away. And Nike had to be terrified when you presented all the evidence that you did. And what's amazing here is Nike was able to convince the federal government that you were a bad guy for bringing forth evidence of their criminal misconduct.
It's astounding. And I just want to be really clear about this. And I've been consistent, and the evidence is going to show this. From the very first contact that we had with Nike, the very first contact, we made it clear to Nike all along that under any scenario, they were going to have to come clean and disclose what happened to the public and the government. That at no point in time would we allow them to cover this up, pay to get out of it, or anything else. Now, there's been select quotes taken out of a transcript, evidently, relating to a wiretap that have been played in the media to make it sound like just the opposite was true. Well, I have news for you. When the evidence and the totality of the circumstances are laid bare, and they will be, because I'm going to fight this like hell, because I'm going to beat it, because it's bogus, people are going to realize what Nike really did. They played the federal government. They played investigators, all in an effort to try to shoot the messenger because they knew how damaging this was going to be, especially in light of what happened in the Adidas case. And Clay, let me also raise this, because I think this is a very important point that hasn't been reported. In September of 17, in connection with the Adidas case, Nike received a subpoena from the federal government asking for information relating to Nike's elite youth basketball program. You may remember that I mentioned that Merrill Code, the defendant in that case, used to be at Nike. The Boies-Schuller law firm handled responding to that subpoena, and that subpoena required Nike to produce all kinds of documents about alleged payments or any misconduct on Nike's part. Well, you know what happened? Nike and Boies-Schuller deceived the government. They didn't give the government the documents. They didn't give the government the 41 pages, for instance, that I've provided to the government. They covered it up because they didn't want the government to know of their own misconduct. They wanted the government going after Adidas. They obstructed justice, and ultimately, when this is laid out, it's going to be a serious problem, not only for Nike, but also for their outside law firm, Boies-Schuller, who participated in the corruption and the cover-up.
You will get the opportunity to tell your side of the story, because this extortion claim, if it's actually brought to trial, you would have the ability to put all this out into the court of public opinion, right? As you're starting to do now, this is not a good result for Nike, in my mind. What do you think ultimately is going to happen here?
Well, I think that I'm going to be exonerated of these ridiculous charges that Nike caused the federal government to bring. I think I'm hopeful that some sense of justice is going to be delivered to Nike as a corporation and these executives. I mean, at a minimum, these executives should be criminally charged with hundreds of counts of wire fraud and other types of fraud relating to this bribery scandal. I think Nike as a corporation should be indicted. You know, Clay, I've never said this before, and I've never announced it publicly. I'm going to do it this morning. In the first meeting that we had with Nike about this, a lead lawyer from Boies-Schuller, I'm not going to mention his name, but the lead lawyer from Boies-Schuller actually said in that meeting that Adidas as a corporation should have been indicted for what they did in connection with the payments. This guy had the audacity to actually, not prompted, he just volunteered that position. Well, if the Adidas should have been indicted, then Nike most certainly should be indicted, because they've engaged in this conduct at a scale, you know, 200-500 times worse than anything Adidas did.
Michael, we need to get you on again, because I'm sure this is going to bring a lot more questions going forward. But again, this story is mind-blowing. I appreciate you bringing all this to light, and I appreciate you coming on with us this morning, my man.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Thanks again.
That is Michael Avenatti, man. I mean, just bombshell after bombshell there.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's go ahead and play the music, boys. We're going to do a little bit of an abbreviated version of the anonymous mailbag today, but we got questions. You got questions? I got answers. Let's hear it, boys.
You've got
mail, mother...
Anonymous mailbag!
If it was a problem, yo, I'll solve it.
All right, who's up first, Dub?
We got Arkansas up first.
Arkansas, what's the problem?
Arkansas, you there?
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
I swear to God.
Clay Travis.
Yes, this is my show. I'm here. Can you hear me? I am very tempted right now to get into my car,
can you hear me?
Drive to the studio in Nashville, and choke to death whoever is in charge of our technology.
You can't hear me, can you, Trent Clay?
I can hear him. Can he not hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
All right, talk.
Oh, okay. The question I have is, did Andy's wife find her wedding ring? And I can find her. I can find her ring if you'll call me.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I can solve your phone problem too.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's a great start. Part of me questions whether I should ever take another phone call on this show for the rest of my life. The amount of anger that I have for our phones is higher than any anger I've ever had for any not inanimate object in my life. Eddie, did your wife find her wedding ring?
Not yet, Clay.
All right. Do you think that that guy in Arkansas, who I could barely have a conversation with, is likely to be able to solve your problem?
I think that's unlikely.
What's the latest on the wedding ring?
Some other things have kind of taken precedent, but I gave her all the suggestions that you gave, and some also some listeners contacted me off the air as well. So
did you find out whether or not it's covered under your home insurance?
Yeah, we have not found that out yet.
Okay. All right. Who's Dub? What's going on? Where's Dub? Is Dub there?
I'm here.
What's going on? Why is Arkansas? Why was that an unmitigated disaster? It's like the Laker franchise put into a phone call.
It may have had something to do with the state of Arkansas.
Yeah. All right. So you're telling me that this next call should work flawlessly, that like most telephones, when I speak, they're going to be able to hear me and vice versa.
It is from Atlanta. So I'm positive about this one.
All right. Atlanta, what's up?
Hey, Clay.
So yeah. Fire away.
My girlfriend has a problem with me wearing the same pair of underwear multiple days in a row. I don't really see the big issue. I do the sniff test. If they're good, I pop it back on, wearing for multiple days in a row. Wonder what we thought.
What kind of underwear do you wear?
Right now I'm on the Me Undies train.
Yeah, but is that like a boxer brief? Is it like a boxer? Is it like a tidy whitey? How would you describe it?
It's a tight boxer.
All right, tight boxer. Thanks for the call. Your girlfriend's right. I will wear jeans for like 2 weeks in a row without changing them, without washing them. Because by and large, I think that the denim fabric, like it doesn't really change. I don't know that when you're that close to the genitals for a man, I think you have to go with the change. Now, look, I don't necessarily subscribe to every single health issue out there. For instance, I oftentimes, when I, like, I don't know about you guys, but if I go to the bathroom right after I have gotten out of the shower, I sometimes will not wash my hands, even in a public venue. Let me give you an example. I oftentimes have early morning plane flights. If I take a shower, get into my car, drive to the airport, and right before I get on an airplane, I have to go to the bathroom, I will not go wash my hands immediately after I go to the bathroom. Why? Because I know my hands are clean and I know my genitals are clean because they haven't touched anything other than my clothes since I got out of the shower. And I feel like I'm more likely to get germs trying to get my hands washed than I am just walking right back out of the bathroom. What's the verdict on that with you guys? That makes sense?
But don't you touch other things as you're going into that restroom?
Not really. Most of the time, there's not a door to the restrooms now, especially not at a airport. You know, they have the corridor where you like walk in, then you have to take a turn, so you can't really see anything. But usually, you don't push a door. And I'm literally not touching anything other than my possessions and just going straight to the bathroom. So my theory then is that I'm more likely to get germs while trying to get my hands washed in the bathroom than I am by just touching myself, peeing, walking out.
That makes sense as long as you're not touching anything that's public. I mean, that's the one thing I pay attention to because a lot of people put their hands on escalators. They put their hands on the mechanism that flushes a toilet and things like that.
Yeah, now what I do use all the time is, remember when everybody thought we were going to die of the flu virus or whatever and they started putting those the dispensers around everywhere where you can like get your hand cleaner.
Yeah,
they were everywhere. I use those at pretty much every time I walk past one. I'm like, well, I'll go ahead and get my hands clean here. Who's up next?
We got Jacksonville up next.
Jacksonville, Florida. What's up? God! I mean, in all honesty, should I just stop taking calls? Is the show in any way benefited by me taking calls? I need to put up a poll. I mean, in all honesty, do we think that the show is benefited by me taking calls in any way?
Some of the best moments on this show have been from the phone.
I can't deal with it! But the phone not working, not what people are actually saying on the phone. I want to think about this for a minute. We're talking about the incompetence of the Laker organization. What about the incompetence of this show's phones? If we made our phones an executive, who would be on the level of the failure of this? Like, I can't even think of an executive as bad as our phones. Think about this. 4 years, I have been trying to do something that should be relatively straightforward. Alexander Graham Bell invented the phone in like 1880. Going to a phone call and talking to a person is literally one of the easiest things technologically that should exist in the entirety of the world. Certainly for a national radio show that is on in all 50 states. If I want to take a call, and I think what, we've taken like 3 calls this week. This is the first time, did we go to the phones earlier? I don't think we've gone to the phones at all, if I'm not mistaken, so far this week. Monday show, perfectly smooth. Tuesday show, perfectly smooth. This is the only phone calls we're going to go to today. And it's an unmitigated disaster.
The phones right now are Dell Demps, who the Pelicans obviously fired. But remember, it's
Dell
a Band-Aid.
Demps was far more competent than our phones.
It's a Band-Aid situation right now because this isn't the new phone system there. Dub
let's be honest.
Dub is still in the makeshift little room that he's in. So
let's be honest.
This has to get better.
The phones are not going to work better when they are a new system.
Yeah, they are.
No, they're not. They haven't worked for 4 years. I am close to making the executive decision that we will no longer take calls on this show. Because the frustration that comes to me when I try to just talk to someone on this show and it doesn't work is off the charts high now. I mean, I'm not kidding. I am contemplating just saying I don't want to do the last hour and a half of the show, getting in my car, driving down to the iHeart Studios, and slowly strangling to death the person who is in charge of our phone. Maybe live on the radio. I think that would be a fair punishment. I don't even think anybody would convict me in a court of law. I think they'd be like, oh, this guy has been in charge of the phones not working for 4 years. He deserved to be killed live on the radio. Talking about Game of Thrones, that's what they would do at Game of Thrones. If they had phones in the Game of Thrones kingdom, there's no way that Cersei would put up with this incompetence. She would shove somebody out the window. She would choke him out. She'd bring in the Mountain and his gold battle armor and have him decapitate somebody. Eventually, incompetence must be dealt with. Sometimes with violence. When we come back, what do you want to say for yourself, Dub?
Look, I'm in a tricky situation here with this new little box room I'm in. I can't answer phones when people are on air, so we got to get the calls lined up first, which is challenging because only a few people call at a time. And our list today involved 4 people, 2 of which dropped or couldn't hear you, Arkansas. Then Jacksonville just dropped the ball there. So we were 1 for 3 today. Hall of Famer in baseball.
That's a really bad argument.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.